This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, staff, for facilitating this, and welcome everyone to the Cross-Community Working Group on Enhancing ICANN Accountability Workstream 2 Human Rights Subgroup, meeting 7 at 1900 UTC on October 4th. Staff, would you be so kind to take a roll call from the Adobe Connect room and ask everyone who is only on the phone bridge to please say their name so we have a full record of attendees. So everyone that is only on the phone bridge, please say your name.
Marcus on the phone bridge. I'm trying desperately to get into the Adobe.
Hi, Marcus. Great you're here. So that means that we have that done. Then I have to ask everyone whether someone has a addition or a change to their statement of interest that they would like to announce. No? And then I will ask anyone who has a addition or a suggestion or a comment on the agenda. Tatiana has her hand up. Tatiana, please come in.
Thanks a lot, Niels. Hello, everyone. Tatiana Trotina is speaking for the record. Niels, I see that we have one very important item, number 2, analysis of RAGI principles, discussion on the principles 19, 17, and 18. I'm wondering if there is a summary of the previous discussions, because I'm still a bit spinning my head around. So we put some of them, like, on hold or agreed on some of them, or, like, I was trying to go through the record of the previous call, and I'm still not sure. Have we reached consensus on the previous principles or not? Could you please just provide a summary or an update for everyone so we will be on, well, at least a bit on the same page? Thanks.
Thank you very much for that question, Tatiana. In last meeting, we discussed principle 13A, 13 and 15, where we said that 13A didn't seem problematic except for wordsmithing, same for 15A, but that 13B and 15B were problematic and needed a definitely needed a second reading, but we haven't made any decisions or haven't reached any consensus yet at all. So we're first at the first reading of all the RAGI principles. That's where we currently are, as far as I understand. But other people might have another reading of that, and I see Greg's hand is up, and Greg might share his view.
Thanks. It's Greg Chatton for the record, and I do share that view that we are in the first reading. I do note that while we are going through this, I think we also need to pay attention to other things, including, as Paul McGrady said, the whole issue of applicable law. And clearly it would do us no good to ignore the existence of the RAGI principles, but neither should we assume anything in particular about them. And that segues to my concern about the agenda. I think we should discuss the draft framework of interpretation document that's been put up and that has received quite a lot of attention lately, although I didn't have an opportunity to turn to it until today. But I think we need to discuss the concept and the approach of that document, and whether, given that we are still on a first reading of the RAGI principle, the document is entirely premature. And I'll withhold further discussion of that for a substantive discussion of the topic, but I think we should add that topic to the agenda. Thank you.
Niels, if I may come in, I'm afraid I still can't get into the Adobe Connect, I can't put up my hand. But on a similar note, I just wonder whether we did not jump too much into the details and whether we should not take a step back. I think in your draft for the FOI, which may be premature or may not, but I think you made a big important point that the rugby principles are essentially not binding. And also in an earlier email, actually, you forwarded the link to Rugby's recommendation for FIFA, which is, in a way, I think, fairly relevant for ICANN. Okay, FIFA is not ICANN, but FIFA is also a not-for-profit organization with a global reach, and there are parallels there. And I just wonder whether we should not take a step back and look at what actually the rugby principles mean and mean not. And you also said at one point that you may think of actually inviting rugby himself to be on a call, and I think that might be very helpful. And lastly, on the applicable law, I think in many ways, yes, applicable law is relevant, but applicable law is applicable in any case, whether or not we have a framework on human rights. Human rights instruments relate to states, not to private organizations. So I feel that has confused much of the discussion. I mean, it is an important discussion, of course, but my plea, and again, it's my personal plea, I'm not speaking on behalf of the board, but I think it might be helpful to maybe take a step back and look at the broad picture of what the rugby principles are, and they are the only instrument available for non-state actors, so they are clearly a very relevant benchmark for whatever way we go forward. So this is my short comment on the agenda. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Marcus. And I feel like I could do with some explanation on the document, because I think it might have been received a bit differently than it was intended. I went about this exercise simply as a notepad to see how we could fit the discussions that we had and how it could potentially look. Nothing more, nothing less. It was a very preliminary document because there were a lot of questions where we were turning around a lot. What could respect mean? What could applicable law mean? How would rugby look if we do not want 13B and 15B? So I've been just trying as a kind of a mental gymnastics to put that in a document. I might have shared that prematurely. Maybe I should have kept it. I wanted to be transparent in my thinking, and I was hoping that we could all benefit from that thinking. I'd like to make it totally clear that it does not, of course, represent any consensus of the group, and I just would like or wanted to feed it in as also something to start, that a replenished drafting group can get their teeth in, and I'm extremely happy with all the constructive comments that we're getting. So it's just a start to thinking, and this was also actually trying to get into the concerns raised by Paul McGrady about applicable law. We wrote something else about what about there in the draft, the same about respecting that Matthew asked about, so I tried to accommodate that. And by no means this was meant to push rugby on everyone. It's just a way how we could see how it could fit for ICANN. I've also been discussing our issues and our approach and problems with John Rugby. He is a very busy man. It was very hard to get hold of him, and I've talked to him on the phone shortly. But I will not cease to keep on trying to get him on a call or perhaps even at a physical meeting. So I'm doing my utmost best to do that. And sorry for having abused my role as a co-chair here. So I will quickly follow the queue again and go ahead to David McCauley. David, please.
Niels, thank you. It's David McCauley for the transcript. and thank you for your comments. I would just like to say that I would, at the appropriate moment in this call, align myself with Tatiana, Greg, and Marcus, and when that point comes, I'll make some comments. But I want to make a procedural point now, and that is with respect to the Freedom Framework of Interpretation document. My recommendation will be, when we get to it, that we have a standalone FOI document and that it's not included in the Google Docs that's going to be accumulating a great number of comments because it just becomes confusing. And so I see the FOI as now being a blank document, but that it will grow once we start accepting things as consensus. And I certainly think that that framework document should be separate so that people can see what it is and what progress we're making separately from all the comments that, again, I think become confusing the more they get made. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that excellent suggestion, David. I can get working on that after this call. So to have a clean document with points that we reached consensus on, I think that is very good to have a clear overview for everyone, also in line with the question that Tatiana asked earlier. So I think that it will be clear and we could be working on that. Kahus, I see you're next in queue. Please come in.
Thank you, Neil. I think people criticizing the preliminary draft or scratch that you have provided, if they can do better, they do it. So it's good to criticize, but it is simple to criticize, but it's difficult to do something. So if it is not okay, so they comment on your document. This is point one. Point two, whenever we start to talk, somebody consistently talk about applicable law. What do you wish to be applicable law? So tell us freely, what in your view is applicable law? Applicable law of certain country? Or applicable law where the court discussing the matter or the people wants to refer to? And thirdly, you are putting some agenda, and I think you have to take the agenda. You have provided a document, very good, people have commented on that, and you continue to discuss 18. That's that. And then another issue is that people complaining that Rogge principle is not our basis document. So what would be our basis document? In the absence of something or anything, this is the only thing that we have. Do you have other principles? At least it is something very well prepared, established. And if it is not relevant to us, okay, take it, say not relevant. Exclude element which is not relevant. So, Neil, we need to really reply to these things. We always back and forth for something. So that is why in a message to the chairman of the CCWG, I mentioned that unfortunately we are back and forth. So could you kindly put some order of this discussions? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kahus. Jorge is next in line. Jorge, please come in.
Hello. Do you hear me okay?
We hear you very well. Thank you.
Hello. Good night for us from Europe. I would like to make some points on the FOI document. First of all, I would like to thank Niels for the effort of really trying to put into writing what we have been discussing. So it's an effort that it's worthwhile, and it gives focus to our discussion. So I think that's a positive aspect of this effort. So that's the first point. The second point is I agree very much with what Markus Kummer said. And as we said before, the Rugby principles, the UNGP, may perhaps not be perfect, but first of all, they are not binding for the business entities And they are, more than that, a benchmark. And they are a benchmark that is recognized internationally. I'm not aware of any other benchmark that is at the same level of recognition of the UNGP. So it would be a bit awkward or bizarre if we would exclude the UNGP from our consideration without really and with an open mind going into the discussion of what the different principles really mean to the ICANN framework and to the work we are doing here with the framework of interpretation. So I really would like to urge colleagues to enter into that discussion with an open mind, because at least for my part, I'm there trying to look into each and every one of the principles and see whether they really put a serious problem to ICANN and how it works. And if it does, let's see and look at the facts and see also what are the measures we can take in order to avoid problems that we don't want to enter into. We also, and you have been, Niels, you have been talking about your contacts with Mr. Raghi. I think those contacts are valuable and they can shed light on what is really the intent and the scope and the implications of the different principles applicable to business entities. As I said before in a different call, there is also a UN working group which is tasked to help any efforts to try to apply or to study to make use of the Raghi principles. So I would really suggest that we get in touch with them and that we also seek their opinion on the issues where we have doubts. And finally, and this is perhaps with my lawyer's hat on, we have to be mindful that we are talking about a core value. So it's a core value which is guiding, and we are talking about giving some interpretation to this core value with international principles embodied in the Raghi principles, which are non-binding too. So it's something that is non-binding interpreted by something that is also non-binding, and where we have a lot of latitude in this work of coming up with the framework of interpretation, of really putting the limits to what these and this commitment means. And I think there's a wild agreement in the community that the mission that we defined in Workstream 1 is the core boundary of anything ICANN will do. So we shouldn't be so afraid that with a core value we will go beyond the mission just with a snap of a finger, because that shouldn't happen if we are mindful of this fact of the mission being really compulsory and binding. So as a final comment, I would also perhaps recommend Niels that if he tries to rewrite a little bit the draft, he try to come up with more descriptive language and abstain for the time being from more normative implications until we find consensus on on the different parts of the RAGI principles, we may want to include into our framework of interpretation. So sorry for taking the floor so long, but I hope that with this my thinking may be clearer for other colleagues. Thank you.
That is very clear, Jorge. Thank you very much. I'd just like to respond that I have reached out to the working group, to the UN working group, and I haven't heard back from them. If you have any suggestion how to get into contact with them directly, that would be greatly appreciated. So I see Greg is next in line. Greg, please come in.
Thanks. A lot has been said, and I won't try to respond to it all. I think that we've, to some extent, lost our way. I think we've gotten away from the idea that what we're doing is interpreting the language of the bylaw, and I think we need to spend more time looking at reading, interpreting the bylaw itself, rather than looking at reading and interpreting the RAGI. With regard to the framework of interpretation, while perhaps it's a notepad, I find it extremely internally consistent with a particular viewpoint, so much so that I was getting a headache trying to edit it. I feel it would be just as productive, in a sense, to have a third column of commentary, which is the counterpoint to the commentary in the second column here, which I think assumes way too much and assumes a particular viewpoint all the way through. And I don't think this reflects our work, and nor does it reflect the stage at which our work stands. I think that, I'm not sure whether we should work on this document at all, but if we do, frankly, I'd say that we have a lot of work to do. And I think what Kavu said earlier, I think completely misunderstands the role of the rapporteur. Maybe you should look up the word rapporteur. It's not intended to be a thought leader, but rather a follower here. It's an awkward and complex task, and any of us who try to do it can sympathize with the position of the rapporteur in this or any other group trying to walk that line. But I think we need to find some way to reflect more than one point of view in this document. Right now, I think it reflects a point of view that's not shared by a number of us. Certainly not at this point. And I think we need to think about what a framework of interpretation is as well. What we're trying to interpret here is what the commitment is that ICANN has made in bylaw, not all the possibilities that are open to ICANN, whether or not this bylaw even existed. We could have had a discussion 2 years ago about due diligence of human rights. That has nothing to do with the bylaw. What we need to do is figure out what the bylaw means and what its commitments are and what its limitations are. Applicable law is a very important limitation. It's a critical limitation. If we don't understand applicable law in the context of this bylaw, then we don't understand the bylaw. So I think we have quite a bit of work to do, and I think we need to figure out how to balance different viewpoints here. I do agree with Jorge that we need to approach this with an open mind. I don't find this right now to be an open-minded approach, and any open-minded approach has to assume nothing about the RAGI principles, whether they're in or out, applicable, not applicable, and take each of them merely as a possibility that is relevant and is also an equal possibility that it is a bad fit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg, and I couldn't agree more. I would love to be a follower, and I really would like to support any initiative for the drafting of text, because we've seen a bit of a stagnation in the activity in the group. But if it was this draft, even if it is in another way than it is intended, can spur volunteers to start drafting and help us writing and go forward, then I can only applaud and support that in any way I can. So we've had different proposals on applicable law. That's something that keeps on returning. The only concrete proposal on how to deal with that is I've seen is that we it was made by Paul McGrady, who said we should analyze state, federal, and county law applicable to ICANN, which have relevant to human rights. That seemed a bit about the mandate and a bit big, so I'm not sure how we should deal with the applicable law question. Maybe looking to the jurisdiction group seems worthwhile, but I'm very much looking forward to people who are suggesting work on that to see how we could address that, or else perhaps put that question even to another subgroup. David, please come in.
Niels, thank you. It's David McCauley again. The term applicable law, I think, is actionable in and of itself. And the reason I say that is it's a term that varies around the world, and ICANN works around the world, obviously, and it's a term that changes. Applicable law changes. And so I think that many corporations, and I think ICANN would be one of them, is certainly able to deal with an obligation that is bounded within the terms of applicable law. And it is an important part of the bylaw. There's three sentences in the bylaw. Two of them have the phrase applicable law. It's something we have to deal with. But I think, I don't know that we need to define it or that we need to specify it or give it detail. I think it's an actionable term in and of itself. Thank you.
So, David, if you have for yourself very clear what applicable law is, would you care to write propose a few sentences about it, because there seems to be not necessarily consensus in the group about how it is and how it works. So if we could tackle that, that would be great progress, I'd say.
Niels, hi, it's David McCauley. I'd be happy to do that prior to the next meeting and send something to the list. And the way it would work in operation is, as I see it, ICANN is an organization that is not right now a hotbed of indifference or indifference to human rights. If an issue somehow cropped up, an organization like ICANN would inform itself what the applicable law is in the circumstances in which it arose. So I'm happy to come up with some wording along those lines, and I'll put it on the list before the next meeting. Thank you.
That's perfect. I think that would already be great progress. So if we now we have that down, would people mind if we go ahead in the proposed agenda, since I haven't seen any other proposed agenda points, with the discussion of Principle 19, as we agreed in last call, and 17 and 18? I see no objection with that. So let's go to the discussion of RUGI Principle 19, which consists again of 19A and 19B. When all the three that we are talking about here are talking about due diligence. So we'll start with Principle 19. Several people have had concerns about due diligence, so I'd like to open the floor to discussion about this. Jorge, please come in.
Hello. Did you hear me okay?
We hear you very fine. Thank you.
Okay. This is Jorge Cancio for the record.
I guess that on principle 19, this is relevant insofar as it helps to construe the meaning of respect, of respecting international human rights. And however, I guess that this is mostly referring to the integration of the human rights commitment into internal processes of ICANN. So I see this principle more related to possible future implementation work by the community and, of course, by staff. So I would leave it at this point. Thank you.
Yeah, that's also a very good point of demarcation, that we're now coming into the operational part of the principles, which indeed is might be part of the framework of implementation and not the framework of interpretation. But understanding a bit where implementation might lead will help us also demarcate what we want to say and not want to say in the framework of interpretation. So that might also help us. Are there other people who want to comment? I see a line forming. That's great. Tatiana, please come in.
Thanks. Tatiana Tropina is speaking for the record. Well, I think we had some arguments about what due diligence means, actually, in the context of RAGI. And I think that in terms of preventing and mitigating adverse human rights impact, these principles borders a bit with not only with implementation, but also with enforcement. And I would rather say that we have to mark it as controversial and look at it together with different examples of both possible problems for CCTLDs, GTLDs, and other relations. So at the first glance, it doesn't look like something acceptable to me because of these problems. Thanks.
Hi, Tatiana. Thanks very much. Could you elaborate a bit more which part here is exactly problematic before declaring something quickly problematic? I think it would be great to have a bit more contentful discussion about them. So could you make it a bit more clear where you have problems with the text that is on the screen right now or concerns?
Okay, now let's start with the first line. In order to prevent and mitigate adverse human rights impact. I'm not sure that this does not cross the border between enforcement and protection of human rights, which we wanted to avoid in our bylaw when we were drafting it. Then
I think
finding
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
No. Please do address this.
No. Please go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, so then effective integration requires that responsibility for addressing such impacts, so appropriate actions. So my question is how these actions will not border with enforcement and protection. So how do we draw the clear line between these two? And taking into account how extensive due diligence is, which is required by RAGI, I just don't know. I can't interpret these principles as standing alone principle. I don't know. You think this is not enough to mark it controversial? Well, I mean, of course, it's up to the group to decide. I just voiced my concerns.
That's great. That's very clear. Thank you very much. Kafous, please come in.
Nils, I don't know where the due diligence comes from. This 19 does not talk about due diligence. It just mentioned that in order to prevent adverse impact, and if there are adverse impact, to mitigate that, business enterprises should integrate findings from their impact assessment across the internal. So the chapeau of this principle is right, because on one hand, we have to prevent such adverse effects,
And if adverse effect happens, you have to mitigate that. And in order to do these actions, any finding of this adverse effect needs to be internally applied. So the principle is right. I don't understand what the due diligence here means. That how quickly apply that? Is it a question of somebody? So I think the remaining part is quite detailed and may not apply, but the chapeau part is applied because it's a very important principle that you have to avoid to have that adverse impact, and if adverse impact happens, they have to mitigate that, and any finding of this happening and mitigation needs to be reflected internally into the process in order not to repeat that. That is the understanding of 19. So the chapeau of 19 seems to be correct. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Cavus. The word due diligence come from the heading of the chapter of 17, 18, and 19, and 20, and 21 in the Ruggie Principles, which says human rights due diligence. So that's where the term is coming from, just as a small note. I see Greg is next in line. Greg, please come in.
Thanks. Greg Chatton, for the record. I think Principle 19 is entirely a matter of implementation, not interpretation, and should be out of bounds for the consideration of this group. It assumes in the chapeau that there is an impact assessment that is going to be made. That in itself is implementation. We certainly haven't discussed whether there is a commitment to do an impact assessment, you know, that can be implied from the bylaw, and I don't believe that there is. I don't believe that there isn't either, but that the question here that's in front of us is interpreting the bylaw. And then the bylaw can go into effect, and then things can, it can be taken from there. You know, consider the fact that the bylaw was made dormant so that we could come up with a framework of interpretation. This is not intended to be some sort of omnibus human rights action plan for ICANN. Our job here is merely to get the interpretation of the bylaw framed up in the proper way so that activities across supporting organizations, working groups, advisory committees, and like can be literally on the same page. Anything, you know, that talks about assuming impact assessments, assuming mitigation, which is, you know, is a set of activities, I think is out of scope and not our job in this group. I'm not saying it's a good or a bad or an indifferent idea. I'm saying it's not our job in this group. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. Just one question for clarification, just to make sure that I understand your point correctly. You think that mitigate should not be part, could or should not be part of the definition of what respecting human rights mean?
I think that in terms of interpreting what our commitment to respect human rights is, I think it's premature to decide what kind of actions should be taken, whether that's mitigation, what mitigation means. I think that's all premature, and certainly deciding how mitigation is going to take place is way premature. So, you know, clearly, you know, it's not likely that respecting human rights means standing idly by and, you know, watching your own organization violate human rights if that's what's happening. But I think the mitigation here assumes a whole bunch of actions in advance of the mitigation phase. Those actions are out of scope for our group, and therefore any particular discussion of what mitigation might involve is out of scope as well and premature. Thank you.
I completely agree that the implementation is out of scope, but unable to understand the boundary we might weigh what different interpretations might consequences that might have for implementation, right? Because else we might have other impacts on implementation that we might have thought about. And I'd like to reiterate Kahu's question, how do we ensure that we draw a very careful line between the framework of interpretation and the framework of implementation? How do we find the right level?
Well, having spent a lot of time in the policy and implementation working group, I think that is an important question, but it's not the first time it's been asked or dealt with, so I think there's a lot of prior material we can go to look at what the difference is between making policy and implementing policy. And I think that as soon as we're, you know, setting out a framework for what people should be actually doing as opposed to how they should read this bylaw, then I think that's a fairly easy test for the fact that we've strayed over the line. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. I see Jorge is online. Jorge, please come in.
Thank you. This is Jorge Cancio for the record. I think we may have here a certain degree of agreement. I would like to stress that I agree with what Greg said on the nature of the implementation nature of this principle. I see the operative parts of this principle in the should integrate the findings from the impact assessment, and this looks very much like implementation, which is not really needed, I think, for giving meaning to the concept of respecting international human rights, which is what is in the core value. Nonetheless, perhaps on the background or origin of this principle, we may have different views when we get into hopefully into discussions about the implementation, because I see the linkage, of course, of Principle 19 with Principle 13b, which uses similar language about preventing or mitigating adverse human rights impacts. However, I would also like to stress, as I wrote in one of my comments, that Principle 13b means no legal obligation for the business entity at all. It has no responsibility for the impact itself. It has no obligation to provide remediation. And what the moral obligation, so to say, that 13b spells out is more related to a protection of the reputation of the business entity. So I would like to also stop this one. But to return to the beginning, I agree that here we could draw the line and say, okay, this is something, human rights impact assessments and how and their findings are integrated into how I can work is something we can do for the implementation. Thank you.
That is a great point. So if we agree on that, then that also gives us a lot of space to things we need to address. That is great. So let's have a look at the next principle, Principle 17. Kavus, I see your hand is up. I'm very sorry. Kavus, please come in. Cavus, might you be on mute? We're having difficulties hearing you.
Out of context here. This is Nala. What is our mandate? Because everything you say, that is not. Maybe some people, they don't want Rogi principle. If they don't want, throw it away. Let's start on something else. How many meetings we should have talking of this, and still people say that applicable law, this is not our term of reference, this is not issue to discuss because it's implementation, and so on and so forth, and then going that applicable law. So do we need to discuss this Rogi or not? No problem, you have another 15, 10 minutes now and another hour next week to go to the rest of the principles, but we have to stop that because it seems that there is a divergence of view, no matter who is right, who is not right. People, they put in doubt many of the principles of Rogi. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus. Jorge, is that an old hand?
It's in your hand.
Please come in.
Hello. Yes. In fact, on Principle 17, which tends to also think that it's more on the implementation side. Yeah, in fact, what it does is to explain what Section 15B means, because it's in Section 15B or Principle 15B, where it is said that the obligation or the concept of respecting international human rights means that you would have to put into place a due diligence process. So I don't think that at the level of the framework of interpretation we have to really go beyond the general notion of Principle 15B, and that Principle 17 with its detailed explanation of how the due diligence would have to look like is more on the side of the implementation. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Jorge. And I see David McCauley has his hand up. David, please come in.
Niels, thank you. It's David McCauley again for the transcript. Just a brief observation. I would align myself with with Greg's position on Principle 17. I think our struggle stems from the fact that the Rogi principles are very broadly drafted to apply or to give insight to every business in the world, whereas we're coming at this from the point of view of a very unique organization that's at a very technical layer of the Internet, not the business layer, if you will, the content or application layer, and I think that's the germination of the struggle that we're having. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David. And I would like to say that the end of there is light at the end of the tunnel, because we almost discussed all the Rogi principles that are applicable to businesses. So we've already really covered some work. So we're really making progress and seeing what addresses, what not addresses, and what is actually within our scope, within the framework of interpretation. So let's not despair. We're making real progress here. Cavus, please come in.
Yes, Nils. I don't know whether we are achieving something or not, but when I look to the entire Rogi principle, I see, first of all, I agree with some of the colleagues saying that they brought, but the whole principle are turning around few words: identifying, preventing, mitigating, taking into account, assessing the adverse aspects of human rights. In 17, in 15, in 19, in 18, it's all this. This is few words, and the entire principles are turning around this word by changing their places
and creating new centers. But the center is this. If somebody sit down and look at all these principles, he can find that there are many common words in all of them, as I mentioned, identification, mitigations, preventions, taking into account assessment and adverse effect, and taking the adverse effect assessment into their internal. So, interpretations. Still, I am questioning, do really we need to go to all of the details of the Ragi principle, or we need to have a look at that one to see whether we can get one or two principles out of that, but not the principle as they are written? Because there are repetitions. Thank you.
That's very much what we're doing, Kavus, and we're almost done with that. And we've seen that 13A and 15A are definitely the ones that we've seen are within our scopes. That already tremendously helps us to understand which parts we take and why we take it and why other parts not, either because we think it's not fitting to ICANN or it's not within the mandate of our group. So that really helps us also in explaining to the CCWG to see what choices we made. So if that is the consensus on 17, that is largely implementation, but we take into account the words identify, prevent, mitigate, and account, and see how these terms revolve, as Kavus clearly mentioned, and as also as Ragi has said himself, the Ragi principles are mostly about knowing and showing and allowing for remedy. So let's see if we can go to the final principle that's on the agenda, and that is principle 18. And let's see, do we agree here again that this is mostly on part of implementation, or if there's also something that we can take from here? Sorry, I was on mute myself. Sorry, Kavus, is that an old hand?
No, a new hand, Niels.
Please come in.
Almost a petition of, 18 is a petition of 17 and 19. You see all of the words there. Risk, the assessment, which is already 19, the adverse human right, whether it is potential or non-potential, impact, to their own activities, that means internally apply. So it's a petition in different words. So I come to my previous statement that perhaps somebody or a few people to see from all of these principles whether we could derive something that could be useful. And after that to see whether it is a policy or it is implementation. That is something that I could offer you at this stage. Thank you.
I'm. Thank you very much, Kavus. And I'm quite excited about the progress we're making. And I think there's also a sentiment that we're seeing now in the chat. But we only have 5 minutes, and we still have two people in the queue. We also need to talk a bit about what we're going to do for next week, because we're coming very close to the end of the meeting. Jorge, please come in.
Hello. I'll try to be...
That was very brief. I think briefer than intended. So while we're waiting for Jorge to recover, Greg, could you please come in?
Thanks. Greg Chatton for the record. I'll try to be brief.
to. I think anything that begins with in order to is getting into implementation and out of our scope. I think we're also being a little sloppy, as I said in the chat, in using the term interpretation as if it is consistent with policy, as because both are being opposed to the concept of implementation. I think that, in fact, implementing the human rights bylaw is going to take a considerable amount of policy work, certainly within the GNSO, which I'm most familiar with, and perhaps, you know, cross-community works as well as or in other structures. But I think that that there's in a stage, in a sense, there's three stages here. There's interpretation of the bylaw. There is putting the bylaw into more specific action phases through policy work, and then finally implementing those policy decisions. So what we need to do here is provide a framework for those policy discussions, so there is a consistency of approach to the bylaw, to the commitments of ICANN, to the limitations of those commitments, and basically just what the word mean, what the words mean. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. We only have 2 minutes left, which is very short, and I would like to use this time to see who has the gusto to take the work in the framework of interpretation, draft framework of interpretation, to a next level, or as Greg suggested, start a third column to see where the discussions that we had and our agreement on 13A and 15A in our understanding of interpretation implementation can now lead to a next part of drafting. Are there people who are willing to take up that challenge and work on that a bit this week? Could I perhaps see some ticks from people who would like to volunteer for that? I see Greg. I see Tatiana, and I see Matthew. Oh, that's a team. That'd be great. Please let me know if you need any, and Jorge. That's great. Jorge, Tatiana, Greg, and Matthew, I will follow up with you after the call to see if I can be of any support to you. And on that note, I would like to thank everyone, staff and participants, for another constructive call, for helping us to go through this this difficult topic and to go where no one has gone before and to continue to going together in this journey. I'm really looking forward to continue working with you all week on the list and next week on the call moving forward to Hyderabad. Thank you all very much, and enjoy your evening.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye, all. Bye, all.